This is a special edition of WTIC's Mental Wellness. Today is World Suicide Prevention Day, and we're going to continue the conversation about how talk saves lives with local marriage and family therapist Anne-Marie Mafeud on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Hello, thank you for tuning in today. We're talking about a very important topic, and that is mental health, the stigma that still exists when we share about mental health. September 10th is Suicide Prevention Day, and this is also National Suicide Prevention Month. You may have listened to I'm Listening, the national broadcast featuring some of the biggest names in music and news and sports and some of the most respected mental health professionals. They were spreading awareness about mental health and the message that talk saves lives. You're not alone, and it's okay to be not okay. We know that the power of talk can save lives, so let's talk. My name is Anne-Marie Mafeud. I'm here on WTIC News Talk 1080. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I've been practicing here in the state of Connecticut for over 30 years, and my practice is in Colchester, and it's called Colchester Counseling Associates. I see clients both in person and via telehealth, and I treat a variety of mental health issues, and I include several different modalities, and I treat clients through individual therapy, group therapy, family therapy, and couples counseling. I also speak here on WTIC every other Sunday at noon, where I share about various mental health topics, and I hope you can tune into that soon. Today I'm joined by my husband, Jim, who is also a licensed marriage and family therapist, and we're going to elaborate on some of the topics you may have heard about if you tuned in to the I'm Listening event. We're going to try to break down mental health stigma, how and when to get help, and review some suicide prevention information here during National Suicide Prevention Month. Jim, maybe you can say a few words about yourself, and then we can move into talking about stigma to start off.
Sure, great. Thank you for having me on. My name is Jim Mafeud. I'm also a licensed marriage and family therapist, and I'm also the CEO of the Children's Center of Hamden. That's a 192-year-old nonprofit that provides mental health, substance use, special education, and services to women with intellectual disabilities. We serve people from across the state as well as the greater Hamden area.
So, Jim, as we focus this month on suicide prevention and mental health issues and mental wellness, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the stigma that exists still around mental health. When I say stigma to you, what comes to mind?
Well, with stigma, a few things certainly come to mind. Maybe you picture the harsh words that people sometimes throw around, words like crazy or unstable. Or maybe you think of silence, the way people lower their voices when talking about depression or therapy, as if it's something to be ashamed of. Stigma is, it's very powerful, but it's not powerful in a good way.
So during this segment of the show, we'll explore what stigma really is, why it's so harmful, and how every single one of us has the power to break it down. Let's start with the definition. How would you define stigma?
Stigma is when someone is viewed negatively, not because of who they are, but because of a condition they live with. In mental health, stigma is the unfair judgment that people with depression, anxiety, or other mental health conditions are somehow less than others. There's a couple of ways stigma shows up. One is a public stigma. The negative stereotypes in society, for example. Think about the way movies often portray people with mental illness as dangerous, violent, or unpredictable. It shapes how we all think, even if we don't mean it to. Then there's also self-stigma, when individuals internalize these messages and start to believe them. For example, a woman with anxiety might think, I'm weak, I shouldn't need help. That self-judgment can be just as damaging as society's view. Stigma is subtle, too. Maybe it's the coworker who avoids sitting next to someone after learning they've been in therapy, or the family member who tells you, to just toughen up. Doesn't always look like bullying, but sometimes it looks like silence, avoidance, or disbelief.
So, Jim, what do you think is the harm of stigma? Why should we care so much about stigma?
Well, stigma is really one of the biggest barriers to treatment worldwide. I can think back almost 20 years ago working in a health center. We had multiple check-in sites off a waiting room, and our behavioral health team didn't want there to be a behavioral health window. They were comfortable with a dental window or primary care. So even as professionals, we have to be comfortable around just having the discussion around mental health. The World Health Organization estimates that nearly two-thirds of people with a diagnosable mental health condition never even seek professional help. And stigma is a major reason why. Think of a teenager that might struggle with depression. They think about telling his parents, maybe they want to tell their parents, let's say, but then they remember how one of their parents one time said therapy was for crazy people. So then they don't want to talk to them. They hide it. Perhaps their grades slip, they isolate from friends, and by the time they finally speak up, they're not just dealing with depression, but they're gone all the way to battling with hopelessness. Stigma can fuel discrimination. People with mental illness sometimes face higher unemployment rates or housing challenges or greater poverty. And probably one of the really upsetting areas or heartbreaking impact on stigma is it contributes to silence around suicide. Suicide is, National Suicide Month, and why we're having this show today. Suicide is one of the leading causes of death among people aged 15 to 29, and many lives could be saved if people just felt safe to ask for help.
So, Jim, do you think society is changing? Are we starting to find ways to break down the stigma around mental health?
I think we're getting better in that regard. I think there's the story of where in Canada, there was a national campaign that I think was called Bell Let's Talk, and it encouraged people to speak openly about their mental health. And after, I think, a few years, they said millions of conversations were sparked by that campaign. Suddenly, it wasn't so unusual to hear a professional athlete say, "I see a therapist." And that shift didn't solve everything, but it has made a huge dent in the stigma. I think in the U.S., we also have experienced similar things. The NFL season just kicked off here this past week, and I think we'll see commercials throughout the year where athletes and coaches are talking about their mental health and they're seeking therapy. Sometimes we also now see here in the U.S. that schools are having more mental health awareness weeks, or workplaces offer an employee assistance program, which is just a wonderful way of employees who may feel like they need some help, they can reach out and often get free counseling initially to just help them on a journey to explore what their greater needs may be. And what's important is every time you talk about mental health openly with friends or children or coworkers, that you suddenly become part of the change.
So how do we break stigma ourselves? How do we be part of that change? What can we do in our own circles?
I think there's a few things that we can do. One is, just being careful, paying attention to your language. So instead of saying there's a person living with, I think it's better to actually say a person who's living with bipolar disorder instead of labeling them a bipolar person, for example. That subtle and simple change can remind us that people are more than just their diagnoses. A few years ago at the state capitol, at the legislative office building, there was a lot of posters put up of individuals with their diagnosis to kind of normalize. These are your coworkers. These are your neighbors. You don't have to be afraid of somebody with a mental health diagnosis. So listen without judgment, right? If someone confides in you, don't rush to say it's just in your head or cheer up. Tell people you hear them, that it sounds tough, and how can you support them? Educate yourself. Learn the facts about mental health conditions. I think with proper treatment, it's up to 80% of people can get better outcomes. So those are some of the areas where we can certainly help. And one last thing would be to speak up when you hear someone making a cruel joke about a mental illness or something of that nature, you know, you can challenge it a little bit and just say, hey, you don't have to argue with them, but just point out that maybe that's not the best way to go. It's learned, and it means that you can be unlearned regarding stigma. We can build communities where asking for help is a sign of courage and not weakness. We can replace judgment with empathy and ignorance with education, and silence with conversation like today.
Thank you very much, Jim. So next time we come on in a few minutes, we'll be talking about how to protect our mental health before a crisis begins. Until then, remember your words and your actions matter. You can be a stigma breaker. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back in a few moments. Okay, welcome back. This is Anne Marie and Jim Mafute of Colchester Counseling Associates, and today we're continuing our discussion of mental health and mental wellness strategies, one of the most powerful but often overlooked parts of mental health. This means taking care of our minds the same way we take care of our bodies, not waiting until something breaks to seek help, but building habits that keep us strong. We'll explore why taking care of our mental health matters, strategies you can use every day, and how schools, workplaces, and communities can play a role. Think of this as your guide to staying mentally fit. So, Jim, why does taking care of your mental health matter?
Well, I think when we think about mental health, or we think about health in general, most of us know the basics. Eat nutritious food, exercise regularly, get enough sleep. We do these things not just to cure illnesses, but to prevent it. And mental health is very much the same. Practicing mental wellness strategies reduces the risk of serious conditions like depression, anxiety, or burnout, a word we often hear. It also builds resilience, your ability to handle stress, setbacks, and challenges without falling apart. So, for example, studies show that people who practice stress management and self-care are far less likely to develop severe anxiety disorders later. Just like brushing your teeth prevents cavities, practicing healthy habits protects your mind. And it's not really just personal. It saves communities money and lives as well. They say that for every dollar invested in mental health prevention and treatment, it would save $4 in lost productivity and healthcare costs. It's pretty powerful return on investment. We're not really a society that's always focused on prevention so much, but certainly being proactive around healthy habits would go a long way.
So those are great points. Thank you, Jim. What can you do practically? Are there any proven strategies that you can share with our listeners?
Well, sleep is definitely one, and I know that's always a challenge for me. We work hard or running businesses or having lots of responsibilities. Sometimes sleep goes to the wayside, but many studies show that routine sleep, it's a reset button for the brain. Typically, we say that adults need 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, that a lack of sleep actually increases the risk of depression and anxiety. Exercise, physical activity, certainly highly important as well. Exercise will release endorphins, our body's natural mood kind of boosters. 30 minutes a day of walking, dancing, or stretching makes a big difference. And the way we eat. A balanced diet, foods that are rich in omega-3s, fruits, vegetables, whole grains. They nourish not only our body, but they also help very much with our brain functioning. And then ways to deal with stress, different outlets. So journaling, proven, very, very proven technique for helping regarding stress and mental wellness, art, prayer. Whatever helps you process emotions is important to do. And then connection. We're wired for relationships. So having a trusted friend or just someone else to confide in lowers our risk of severe mental health struggles very dramatically. And mindfulness is a big area as well. Practices like meditation, deep breathing, help calm our nervous system and help us focus on the present instead of ruminating on all the what-ifs. So prevention doesn't have to be complicated, but it's important for us to just be consistent, make small choices that build up over time.
Those are really great points, things that we can all do in our own lives. We also want to talk about the roles of schools, workplaces, and communities. Focus on mental wellness and using strategies to prevent increased mental health issues works best when it's not just an individual effort, but a cultural one. When everybody works together, we can greatly reduce exacerbated mental health issues and keep both our employees and our students and our community members more on the mental wellness path.
Yeah, definitely. In schools, for example, intervention can look could be something like a social emotional learning program that helps teach kids how to handle emotions, resolve conflicts, seek help. Research will show that schools with these programs often see fewer dropouts and have better grades. In a workplace, strategies might include flexible schedules, mental health days, or EAP programs, which we mentioned earlier. Burnout's one of the leading causes of mental health struggles in adults, so these are all very important areas. And then for our community, programs could include public awareness campaigns, kind of like today's program, accessible counseling centers. You know, the Children's Center where I work provides services to individuals throughout the state. And there's many other child guidance clinics or adult clinics where folks can seek mental health counseling and support services. Even safe recreational spaces helps. And when communities invest in prevention, everyone ultimately benefits. The studies show crime rates drop, substance use often decreases, and there's often an overall improvement around well-being.
So we also want to talk about personal reflection. You know, let's get personal with this. Ask yourself, what small steps am I taking to protect my mental health every day? Am I sleeping enough? Am I moving my body enough? Am I reaching out when I feel stressed? What would you add to that, those thoughts, Jim?
Well, I'm definitely not sleeping enough. But I think if you really think about caring about your mental health, it can sometimes feel overwhelming. So just start small. Pick one habit, maybe drinking more water and hydrating or committing to a daily walk. They're simple but easy. And over time, those little shifts can create a foundation of resilience, make you stronger. So remember, you know, it's not about being perfect. It's about creating a lifestyle where mental health is valued, cared for, and prioritized before a crisis occurs.
Yes, I think the more proactive we are, the better we will achieve our mental wellness goals. And addressing our mental health and being mentally fit is powerful. It helps us avoid suffering, saves resources, and builds stronger, healthier communities. The habits that you build today can protect your mind for years to come. So this is Amory and Jim from Colchester Counseling Associates. Our contact information is 860-537-5280. And we are here on WTIC News Talk 1080 on National Suicide Prevention Day. And we will be back to continue our conversation. And thank you for listening.
This is a special edition of WTIC's Mental Wellness. Today is World Suicide Prevention Day, and we're going to continue the conversation about how talk saves lives with local marriage and family therapist Anne-Marie Mafeud on WTIC News Talk 1080.
Hello again. This is Anne-Marie Mafeud of Colchester Counseling Associates, along with my guest Jim Mafeud of the Children's Center of Hamden. And we are here on WTIC News Talk 1080. Thanks for joining us in our discussion on mental health on this National Suicide Prevention Day. In this session, we talked about our mental health, how to build habits that keep our minds healthy. But let's be real. Life is full of unexpected challenges. Even with the best habits, stress, grief, and setbacks are part of the human experience. That's where coping comes in. Coping is how we handle life's storms, and today we'll look at healthy coping versus unhealthy coping, practical tools for daily life, and the importance of professional support and how to build resilience. So, Jim, can you share a little bit about coping styles?
Sure. I guess first we should just start off with, like, let's understand coping styles. When stress hits, we all have our own way of reacting. We react in different ways. Some responses help us while others harm us. So an unhealthy coping might include numbing feelings with alcohol or drugs, overworking to avoid emotions, isolating, or lashing out at others. This may bring a temporary relief, but they deepen the problem. We usually turn to these methods to anesthetize ourselves, feelings that may be troubling us from our past or even the present. We have to ask ourselves, am I really helping myself in the long term, or am I just feeling better until things wear off? Healthy coping, on the other hand, helps us face challenges without damaging our well-being. This can mean problem solving, seeking support, practicing relaxation techniques, or just expressing emotions creatively. So if you think about it, after a stressful day, do you collapse with 3 hours of mindless scrolling, or do you take a walk, call a friend, or write down your thoughts? That the choice matters and how you do that.
I agree with that, Jim. It definitely matters what choices we make and how we handle the obstacles that life throws at us. Let's talk about some tools that you can use right away.
Okay, well, there's a few things we can do. Breathing is real simple, just breathing exercises. Just 5 slow breaths can calm your body's stress response. Just think about that. Just 5 slow breaths can calm things dramatically. A grounding technique. You could try what they call the 5-4-3-2-1 exercise. Name 5 things you see, 4 you feel, 3 you hear, 2 you smell, and 1 you taste. It pulls you back into the present moment, just about getting grounded in the present moment. Movement, such as physical activity, it isn't just prevention, it's an immediate stress reliever. And so just very important to do, and again, easy. And creative outlets, such as music, drawing, gardening, they release emotions in safe ways. Another one would be connection. Say you call a trusted person and simply just saying, I'm having a rough day. That can be incredibly healing. So practicing self-care in whatever fills your cup, journaling, practicing gratitude, lighting a candle, taking a bath, things like that, even reading a good book or writing poetry, taking pictures of nature, those are all just a few things one can do. None of them will erase stress, but they stop it from overwhelming you.
Those are all great ideas, Jim. I know that I often tell my clients, as far as practicing gratitude, to put a notebook or a sticky pad next to their bed and each night to write down 5 things that they're grateful for. And it can be anything. Everybody can think of 5 things, no matter how small, that you're grateful for. And this helps you practice gratitude. Sometimes, even doing these coping mechanisms, we do need some professional support. Do you want to say a little more about that, Jim?
Well, sure. I mean, both of us are therapists. We understand the value of that and the help that therapists can help provide people. But coping, you know, may just sometimes require more than a personal strategy. Just like one might go see a doctor for a persistent cough or some other thing, physical ailment, it's helpful to seek a professional therapist or counselor for persistent emotional pain. So therapists, counselors often get used synonymously, and they provide many things like support groups and give tools to people that you may not have developed on your own. So also, a counselor may refer one to a psychiatrist or another medical provider, where medication may also be helpful in a life-changing process. But most important, remember, seeking help is not a weakness. It's a strength. It means you value your life enough to get support.
Yes, Jim, and I don't think we can stress that enough, especially since we are in the profession, but, you know, providing a safe, confidential place for people to talk about their mental health issues is what we do as therapists. And it's really important to understand that this is just part of taking care of you when you're taking care of your whole self. And that's how your mind and your body being connected can be well at the same time. We also want to talk about building resilience. What do we mean when we talk about resilience, Jim?
Well, just think about how we develop muscles, right? So resilience is like a muscle. It grows when it's exercised. So people who cope well often share a few traits. Some of those traits would be they maintain a perspective. They remind themselves that tough times are temporary, right? It's a good mantra, right? This too shall pass. They have supportive relationships. They practice gratitude, focusing on what's still good, even in a hardship. And as mentioned a couple times today, I believe we've talked a bit about journaling, and a journal of gratitude will go a long way for mental health and for resilience. And so it's also important for people to know resilience doesn't mean you're avoiding pain. It means you're bouncing back, right? Not perfectly, but enough to keep moving forward. And the key is always knowing there's another step to take and keep moving forward.
So to sum up, coping is how we navigate life's storms. Healthy coping strengthens us and unhealthy coping weakens us. And professional support is always a valid option. Now let's talk a little bit about healthy choices, how everyday decisions can help us keep on track to mental wellness. You may be surprised on how much this will help. Every decision we make, from what we eat to how we spend our free time to the people we surround ourselves with, affects our mental health. What else would you like to say about the importance of the mind-body connection, Jim?
I would say that, you know, science will tell us that brain and body are deeply linked. Often when it comes to primary health, we think of our body and somehow our head is disconnected from it. If you looked at that image, you'd kind of be like, this doesn't make sense, right? Our brain is attached. Our head is attached to our body. So a healthy body supports a healthy mind. So when we eat well, when we move daily and sleep consistently, our brains will function better. Just think about the last time you skipped a night of sleep. Did you feel foggy or irritable or maybe even hopeless? That's what the mind-body connection is like in action. So healthy choices like exercise help increase serotonin and dopamine, chemicals that help fight depression. A balanced diet helps reduce inflammation, which is linked to mood disorders. These choices to be healthier, they're not about perfection again, right? Nothing's about perfection. It's about progress and it's about consistency.
Right. And our social environment plays a huge role in mental health as well. Choosing supportive, uplifting relationships protects us from strength. Toxic or draining relationships, on the other hand, can harm our self-esteem and our peace of mind. What kinds of things would we ask ourselves around this topic, Jim?
I would say, you know, one thing you could ask yourself would be, do people in my life bring out the best in me? Do I feel safe being myself around them? It's important to surround yourself with those who will support your growth. And remember, giving support also matters too. So volunteering, helping neighbors, or mentoring younger people gives us a sense of purpose and condition, you know, connection to others. I think one of the healthiest choices we could make is to live with purpose. Purpose doesn't always mean a fancy career or some big major achievement. It can mean raising children, creating art, or contributing to your community. Purpose comes from what we do daily and believe in. Psychologists have also found that people with a sense of purpose live longer and are less likely to develop depression in the first place. So, you know, these are important things to just keep in mind.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you for listening. This is WTIC News Talk 1080 on National Suicide Prevention Day. And when we return, we will talk a little more specifically about suicide prevention. Hi again, this is Anne Marie Mafute of Colchester Counseling Associates, and I'm here with Jim Mafute of the Children's Center, and we're continuing our conversation on this day of suicide prevention and this month being National Suicide Prevention Month. Today's program might feel heavy, but it's also one of the most important conversations we can have, which is suicide prevention. Jim, I know even saying the word suicide can be alarming to some people, but silence can be dangerous. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Certainly, according to the CDC, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more than 49,000 people died by suicide in 2023. So, perspective on that is that's one death in every 11 minutes. Probably more important, though, is that behind every one of those numbers is a son, a daughter, a mother, a father, a friend, you know, or a neighbor. So, you know, that's what we have to remember. These are people, and it impacts many people when someone commits suicide. But the important truth is that suicide is preventable. And the most powerful message we can share is that you're not alone. There is help, there is hope, and there are ways that we can all be part of the solution.
That's right, Jim. And I think it's great that we have people listening to this program to remind us all that we aren't alone. We want to start by understanding suicide. What drives suicidal thoughts?
Well, there's a lot of things that could drive suicidal thoughts. It's certainly not it's rarely about a single event, right? It's usually the result of deep pain or overwhelming stress or a feeling of hopelessness. It could be connected to depression, to trauma, financial struggles, bullying, addiction, or other forms of loss. But it's important to just note that, right, having suicidal thoughts does not mean that someone is broken or beyond help. Thoughts of suicide are a sign of distress, like chest pain or severe chest pain might be a sign of a heart trouble and that you need to go get help. There's just signals that support and care are urgently needed when one has emotional thoughts or thoughts of pain and emotional distress. But unfortunately, it's the stigma that keeps people silent. We talked about that earlier, Anne-Marie. So again, I appreciate you having me on today. And as you're doing this show to talk about suicide prevention, we need to move beyond stigma. People fear they might be judged or that others won't understand. That silence can make someone feel even more isolated. And that's why talking openly about suicide is so critical. It breaks the silence and it lets people know they're not alone.
That's right, Jim. And I think it's important we also talk about the warning signs. You know, how can we recognize when someone might be struggling? What are some common warning signs that we might see in others?
Well, there could be many. An obvious one would be if someone's saying they want to die or saying things like, I can't go on. I can remember back to high school, there was two kids in my high school that had actually committed suicide. And retrospectively, you know, when people talked after the fact, there were a bunch of signs that they each had given to people. And so somehow, you know, the dots didn't get connected. And that's the tragedy, because they were giving hints. So some of those include things like withdrawing from friends or family or activities that they once enjoyed. A sudden mood swing, especially a sudden calmness after a long period of sadness, that can signal that a decision's been made. So it might almost seem contradictory, but right, that calmness after a long period of sadness. Giving away possessions or saying goodbye. Again, pretty strong statements or actions. An increased use of alcohol or drugs and substances. And one that's important for people to take into account is if someone's expressing feelings of being a burden to others. So if you notice any of those signs, don't ignore them. Trust your instincts, trust your gut. it's better to ask and be wrong than to say to stay silent and risk regret.
Well, and it's important to know that you don't have to be professionals and therapists like myself and Jim. We all can help. This is where you all come in. You don't need to be a professional to make a difference. What are some of the things that everybody can do when they think they have a concern about someone they care about, Jim?
Well, one key thing, Amory, would certainly be to ask directly. Yeah, that could feel scary, but research will show that asking, are you thinking about suicide? It doesn't, it's not going to plant the idea in someone's head. It actually will open the door for honesty. Listen without judgment. Don't rush to fix or lecture. Just listen and show compassion. Sometimes a calm presence is more powerful than advice. Encourage help. Offer to connect them with a counselor, a doctor, or a crisis hotline. Again, you don't have to be the solution for them. You're just providing support, caring, kindness, connection. And you could say, though, I'll go with you if you would like. I'll attend an appointment with you if you'd like. It's important to stay connected. Even after the immediate crisis, check in regularly. A text, a call, quick coffee, something like that. Again, around connection, that can be life-saving.
Yeah, it's really important, even if you're just the one person who reaches out to someone, you could make that difference. And remember, you don't have to solve everything. Your role is to remind someone you matter. You're not alone. Help is available. Suicide prevention isn't just about crisis moments. It's about building a culture of hope. And that means teaching young people it's okay to talk about feelings. It means workplaces offering mental health support. It means communities normalizing therapy and counseling. Hope can be very powerful, Jim, don't you think?
The studies will show that people who feel connected to others, who feel a sense of purpose, who know they're valued, are far less likely to consider suicide, right? So again, just purpose and connection are just so crucial in this preventive process. It's really nice when you think that many people, you know, who once attempted suicide go on to live a full, meaningful life. Like, that's an important thing to just remember about hope. Hope prevails. So their stories, the ones that have moved on after an attempt, it can remind us all that pain is temporary. I like the line, right? This too shall pass. It's important, right? And also that recovery is possible.
Now, if you're listening and you've had thoughts of suicide, I want you to hear me clearly. You are not alone. Your life matters. Reaching out for help is not a weakness. It is courage. So please talk to someone you trust or call a crisis line. In the United States, you can dial 988 anytime to connect with the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. For everyone else listening, let's take a moment to reflect who in your life might need a little extra kindness right now. A call, a message, an invitation. Sometimes the smallest gesture can remind someone they're not alone. In closing, suicide is a difficult topic, but silence only deepens the pain. Talking about it saves lives, and recognizing warning signs saves lives. Reaching out, listening, and reminding others they are not alone, that saves lives.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's just important. It would be great if we all together can commit to create a culture where hope is stronger than despair, where no one ever feels they must face their darkest moments alone. That's why therapists exist and counselors, why centers exist, and there's many places one can reach out to get help. So again, I appreciate you having me on, Amory. Important topic, and folks, just be aware and embrace what's in front of you when somebody might be looking like they need some help.
Thank you very much, Jim, for being with us today. This is Amory Matthew of Colchester Counseling Associates here with WTIC News Talk 1080. Our contact information is 860-537-5280. And we want to thank you very much for listening on this National Day of Suicide Prevention. And remember, you are not alone.
This has been a special edition of WTIC's Mental Wellness. Mental Wellness can be heard every other Sunday at noon. The next episode will be September 21st on WTIC News Talk 1080.